This is a CBC podcast. From Dragon's Den to Hockey Night in Canada, and from Marketplace to the Tudors, you can watch full episodes of your favorite shows from CBC Television whenever you want. Just head to cbc.ca/video.
It's Tuesday, July 6th. Queen Elizabeth toured the Waterloo-based tech company RIM yesterday and was given a new BlackBerry as a gift. Currently, Her Majesty was appreciative and gracious until she saw Canada's data plan rates. This is The Current Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the summer edition of The Current. I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. At least 14 people are expected to appear in a courtroom in Toronto later today on charges related to the protests during the G20 summit. By the time the protests were over, police had detained more than 1,000 people, making it the largest mass arrest in Canadian history. This morning, 10 days after the riots that sparked a police crackdown, fewer than 20 people are still being held. Protesters and civil liberties activists say that's proof the police overreacted. But according to a recent poll by Angus Reid, that's not how most Canadians see it. Two-thirds of Canadians believe the police were justified in their actions, and nearly three-quarters of Toronto residents support the way police handled the situation. So this morning, we're asking what that public perception says about our views of civil liberties and whether Canadians are too quick to give up those rights in the name of preserving public order. For their thoughts on that question, we're joined by Shanaz Gokul. She's the chair of Amnesty International's Toronto organization, which has been calling for a public inquiry into police actions at the summit. And James Morton is the former president of the Ontario Bar Association. He also teaches at the Osgoode Hall Law School at York University. They're both with me in Toronto. Hello to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pia.
Shanaz Gokul, what do you make of those poll results?
You know, I think it's an interesting thing. If I was my mother from Nova Scotia watching the media clips that showed repeatedly, the few police cars that were firebombed and downtown Toronto looking like a war zone, I might think G20 security operations a success. So I think that the media has some responsibility in contextualizing how Canadians have come to that opinion, because there are many Canadians like myself and Amnesty International who were part of the June 26th march and rally in support of labor unions and other not-for-profit and NGOs talking about maternal health and women's issues and Indigenous rights. And we have a slightly different perception of what actually happened that day. I think a lot of that wasn't covered. So, you know, in terms of where Canadians have, how they've derived that opinion, a lot of it is from the media reports that were very slanted in terms of what happened that weekend.
Well, James Morton, what's your take on Canadians' reaction to the G20 summit, and specifically the way that the police handled the protests?
Well, to my mind, the views as expressed in the Angus Reid poll don't really say a whole lot. They talk about the way Canadians react. Mm. What's important is what actually happened on the ground. To my mind, looking at things in a general way, it seems that the police did act appropriately and they did keep, as you said, peace, order, and good government going. There were individual problems and there may have been some excesses, but overall it seems that they did a good job.
You say appropriately, police handled themselves appropriately, but was it legal what they did?
To my mind, yes. There were certain instances, particularly on Sunday, where there were detentions of large numbers of people. It appears that most of them were released fairly quickly. As you've noted, there's only 20 people still apparently in custody. You have to look at the situation itself. When you're looking at a situation where there was considerable violence, considerable rioting, and considerable problems, the police acted in light of that, and it seems to me probably acted appropriately. Again, there may be a good reason to investigate, and I understand that that's actually being considered as we speak.
Shanaz Gokul, if it's legal, does it make it okay?
You know, I think instead of sort of looking at sort of the discussion I'd like to talk about is some of the troubling tactics that were used over the course of that weekend. The kettling, the boxing in of not just protesters and demonstrators, but passerbyers who were kept, you know, especially on the corner of Queen and Spadina on the 27th for hours. Was that a technique that was used in order to find, you know, a few criminal elements within that crowd? Those are questions that we need to have answered. And I think that an independent review is the best way to move forward to understand what some of the police tactics were. You know, what were the conditions in the detention facility? How were people who were detained treated? I think it's also troubling that we don't know of the over 1,000 people that were arrested and detained, how many are actually being charged and what are they being charged with. So there are a lot of questions that need to be addressed.
But if the poll is reflective of what Canadians really think, I mean, is this a situation where Canadians simply just don't care that civil liberties are being curtailed?
You know, I think that we need to move the dialogue from sort of an either-or, that it's either you have human rights or you have security. They're not mutually exclusive, and I think that everybody would agree that, you know, the police are important, very important social actors, not just for upholding law and order, but for protecting and enabling human rights.
And I think you do make a good point, but what has to be looked at is a balance. The situation was one where the police were facing goading an unruly crowd and some significant problems from a small number of protesters. It must be emphasized that the overwhelming majority of people were protesting in a legitimate, proper, and appropriate fashion, and that's something we want to encourage. However, in the context of ongoing violence and destruction of property, you have to look at what the police did. It's a balancing. It's not an either-or. It's a question of what's reasonable in the context.
Well, what do you say to that guy or gal that was caught up in the police crackdown, that they were that innocent, peaceful protester, but somehow they got, you know, arrested and detained?
And that's a most unfortunate thing, and that's something where their civil liberties were, in fact, curtailed. But what you have to look at is the overall context. Was it necessary in that context for the police to basically kettle in a group of people to try to stop violence spreading or expanding? That's something which is fact-driven. I don't know. It would appear that the police had grounds to do it, and I understand that the police are themselves investigating to determine if it was appropriate. Whether we need a public inquiry is another question. To my mind, I think internal police investigations are the way to go, at least for the moment.
Well, Shanaz Gokul, I want to ask you, you know, leading up to the summit, the police said our main job is to protect these world leaders that are here. And that's what we're going to do, whatever it takes, so to speak. In this sort of post-9/11 world, should we expect our civil liberties to be more restricted in certain situations these days?
I think that in regards to the G20 summit, that there is a, you know, there certainly is an obligation on the part of police services to protect world leaders, but there's also an obligation to protect the residents and people working in Toronto. And I think that in terms of contextualizing what happened over the weekend, we can't just look at policing actions that happened over the 25th, the 26th, and the 7th. We need to contextualize that in terms of, you know, the decision-making process that was involved that brought the G20 summit to the largest downtown urban center in Canada. Mm-hmm. And I think an independent review can address some of those. I guess that's troubling in itself if Mayor Miller is saying that, you know, he wasn't, you know, in favor of it, and if he was, he wanted it in a different location. You know, how are the three tiers of government responsible in making that decision? And I think that that's where an independent review needs to start from, because that's where some of the troubling questions really, really begin.
And I completely agree. Putting the G20 where they did on the time they did, in the middle of Toronto on a summer weekend, was obviously not an appropriate thing to do. That, however, is not something that the police have the blame for. Once the G20 was fixed to happen in downtown Toronto, the police took the actions they had to take. To my mind, it was inappropriate to put the G20 there. It should have been somewhere else, perhaps the exhibition grounds. But that's a bigger question, and that's not something that really would be addressed by a public inquiry.
But I think it could be addressed through a public inquiry, because I think that, you know, you can't look at just sort of the outcomes of the policing actions. You have to look at what led to that. And certainly in the city of Toronto, for residents living here, there was a buildup that sent a very chilling effect to people within the city and people who were thinking of coming to Toronto for that weekend. And, you know, one of the questions that Amnesty International has is, you know, what was the effect in terms of deterring people who wanted to come out and peacefully demonstrate on some of the important issues that they wanted to take to the G20 world leaders. So that's something that's foremost in our mind, and I think that you can't separate a review in terms of the policing actions on the weekend and all of the things that led up to what happened over the course of that weekend.
Well, how concerned are you that the police handling of the G20 summit has somehow created some sort of precedent for future scenarios where we have civil liberties and security at odds in Canada and security wins?
I think the thing that's troubling for a lot of people, and going back to your poll, On the 28th and on July 1st, there were thousands of Torontonians that were down at Queen's Park and throughout the city that were demonstrating in terms of, you know, calling for an independent review, wanting some more accountability. And what we see now is that there seems to be a bit of a breach in terms of public trust. And I believe that holding a review and, you know, determining accountability of the actions that led and to the G20 weekend and over the G20 weekend can help to restore some of the public trust that has been lost due to the events that happened that weekend.
Well, James Morton, what about you? Do you think that this balance between civil liberties and security in Canada has been somehow rejigged because of this summit? And if so, what kind of implications does that have for the future?
I don't think there has been a change. I think that what we see here is a dramatic example of the police power, which was forced upon the police in the city because of putting the G20 where it was. That said, I don't see this as any different than the type of policing we've seen in the past in Montreal, for example, or in other centers. It is, and I agree, very unfortunate that the G20 was where it was when it was. But having said that, I don't think new precedents are set. I don't think that this has changed the balance of civil liberties in Canada. It is critical to maintain the right to protest. That is something that is absolutely essential. It's also critical to maintain a peaceful downtown so that everyone can be downtown and protest in any way they see fit.
Well, clearly this discussion is far from over. Thank you to you both.
Thank you, Pia.
Shanaz Gokul is the chair of Amnesty International's Toronto chapter, and James Morton is a former president of the Ontario Bar Association.
Sir, what is it with all these men with guns around here?
Haven't you noticed?
Yeah, I've noticed them. I worry you people decided to have them.
What's your worry?
I'm not worried, but you
so
seem
you're
to
not
be.
Worried. What's your? I don't worry.
I'm worried about living in a town that's full of people with guns running around in it.
Are you? Have they done anything to you? Have they pushed you around or anything?
They've pushed around friends of mine.
Yeah. What were your friends doing?
Trying to take pictures of them.
Aha.
Is that against the law?
No, not at all.
That, of course, is that infamous tape of Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau being interviewed by CBC reporter Tim Ralph on October 13, 1970. 8 days earlier, the FLQ had kidnapped British Trade Commissioner James Cross, which prompted Trudeau to invoke the War Measures Act.
No, I still go back to the choice that you have to make in the kind of society that you live in.
Well, there's a lot of bleeding hearts around who just don't like to see people with helmets and guns. All I can say is go on and bleed. But it's more important to keep law and order in this society than to be worried about weak-kneed people who don't like the looks of a soldier.
At any cost? At any cost? How far would you go with that? How far would you extend that?
Well, just watch me.
For a historical perspective on how Canadians value civil liberties and public order, we're joined by Dominique Clement. He is a historian and professor of sociology at the University of Alberta. He's the author of Canada's Rights Revolution, Social Movements and Social Change, 1937 to 1982. And he's also a board member with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. He's in Winnipeg this morning. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Well, do you see any parallels between 1970 and 2010?
Absolutely. When I see the parallels, I see a public that generally supports the government's actions as they did in 1970, as it seems the poll suggests, 2010. I see an undercurrent of opposition, civil liberties groups, women's groups, other groups like that, who oppose the government's actions. But I think the most important parallel is that we see in both cases that if you give police officers extensive powers, unrestricted powers, it's almost inevitable that there will be abuses. I can tell you stories in 1970 of senior RCMP officers. They're walking into the offices of student newspapers. These are police officers approaching 20, 21-year-old kids and telling them that if you print anything on the FLQ, we're going to arrest you. And they're doing that in Victoria, St. John's, Newfoundland, all over the place. So I think we need to be, it's an interesting parallel, the way in which the police tend to use powers when given them with limited restrictions.
Well, historically, how have Canadians reacted to a curtailment of their civil liberties?
Well, it's interesting. You know, if you were to look at polls in 1970, you'd see the exact same thing. You'd see the majority of Canadians saying, absolutely, I support the use of the War Measures Act in 1970. Although it's interesting, in 2000, when the cabinet documents, secret cabinet documents were revealed from the October crisis, Trudeau himself had worried that he would be painted as having abused civil liberties and how the public would perceive him. And it's true, there were quite a few people out there who opposed the use of the War Measures Act. And I think what's largely happening is that, you know, if you call up somebody in St. John's, Newfoundland in 1970, who's quite distant from what's going on in Montreal, and say, do you support the use of the War Measures Act? Of course, they'll say, yes, absolutely, I do. But were they aware, for instance, that in Vancouver, the police were arresting people for distributing flyers in the FLQ, that the mayor of Vancouver was threatening to run hippies out of town to use the War Measures Act, and that the premier was actually threatening to fire teachers who spoke in favor of the FLQ. And in fact, one man was indeed fired for speaking in a high school in favor of the FLQ. So I wonder if people would be just as sympathetic or supportive of these powers if they were deeply aware of some of the abuses that were going on.
Well, I think some Canadians would say that what was happening in 1970 and the circumstances around that are quite different than the G20 summit and the protests of 2010. Are there other examples in Canadian history when civil liberties have been suspended?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can. Well, it depends on how you define suspended. But for example, in 1946, all Canadian civil liberties were suspended when the government feared the existence of a Russian spy ring. So they used wartime powers to detain people, to investigate them, and to eventually prosecute them for being suspected spies. You have the Winnipeg General Strike back in 1919, when their government used excessive powers to deal with communists. Actually, a good parallel to Toronto is a Gastown riot in 1970, where the police essentially sitting on horses surged into a crowd of people in Gastown, essentially a group of youths who were protesting restrictive drug laws. And the police surged and beat people and hurt people. So there are many parallels in the past of what we've seen in the G20 in Toronto. It's, people tend to think of Canada as a peaceable kingdom, but these things happen many times.
Well, do Canadians differ from other, say, Americans or the British when it comes to the curtailment of their civil liberties?
That's a really good question. I think historians in the past would have told you that Canadians are deferential to authority. After all, how many countries have the RCMP or the National Police Force as a national symbol? It's fairly unusual. We're also a big country with a small population spread out over a large distance, so people would argue we're deferential to the state. I don't agree with that. Canada has a very long history of human rights and civil liberties advocacy. You know, we have some of the longest standing human rights groups in the world. We're major promoters of human rights. I think the polls like the one you were mentioning earlier, like I was saying earlier, tend to be a little, they give the impression that people are supporting these actions. I think in most cases, people are unaware of what's going on. People are unaware of the extent of the abuses. You know, the best way, I always tell my students, the best way to protect human rights is not through laws, it's not through the police, it's through a well-informed public. So I think we have to be a bit careful with agreeing with this idea that Canadians are deferential or happy to suspend their civil liberties. I don't think there's any reason to believe that.
Well, critics of the way the province and the police handled the G20 protesters have been calling for that public inquiry. We heard Shehnaz Gokul earlier from Amnesty International making that same call. But last week, Ontario Premier Dalton McGuinty said, you know, quote, people who feel that their rights have been abridged have various avenues available to them, including a civilian oversight committee for the police. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Canada has made some real strides in the past 30 years with creating civilian oversight for the police. Ontario in 2009, for instance, created an independent civilian system in which you could go into an office where it's all civilians and make a complaint against the police, and they will create oversight the investigation. It's a start, but my concern is that Canada actually has a lot of flaws. And we've heard this when it comes to tasering investigations or violence on part of the police. When it comes to civilian oversight, for instance, in most jurisdictions in Canada, it's still the police who do the investigations. You know, so it's their colleagues who are investigating these abuses. That doesn't really create a strong sense. It creates a sense of bias there. And the other concern I have, and this is a real debate, but who should be the one who imposes a penalty? In most jurisdictions in Canada, in fact, I believe it's all of them, it's the chief of police. But the civilian review oversight group should have some role playing in imposing these kind of penalties. So the civilian oversight system is certainly better than it was 10 years ago, and it's a good start, certainly for looking into the facts. But Canada is really behind in a lot of countries in terms of creating an effective system. So I'm a little skeptical if it will be an effective route to follow.
Dominique Clément, thank you for your time this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Dominic Clément is a professor of sociology at the University of Alberta and the author of Canada's Rights Revolution, Social Movements and Social Change, 1937 to 1982. Well, of course, we're always interested in what you have to say about what we talk about here on The Current. So email us, go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent, and click on the Contact Us link. You can also find us on Twitter. Tweet us there at TheCurrentCBC. I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. Thanks for listening.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.